This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. This week, we're breaking down the North State's case numbers. We'll also hear from Butte County's Public Health Director about the county being added to the state's monitoring list, and we'll head to Plumas and Sierra counties to hear how teens there are coping during summer of pandemic. If you have questions or comments for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216, or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, July 24th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, the news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. A second Colusa County patient has died from the COVID-19 pandemic, the 23rd North State victim of the coronavirus, as cases statewide soared by more than 12,000 to 425,616. Authorities have not released any additional information about the patient or where or how they might have caught it. The death comes as North State health officials confirmed 103 new cases across the 11-county area Thursday, increasing the region's caseload to 2,709. Test positivity rates are at or above the state average in four counties locally: Colusa, Glenn, Sutter, and Yuba. The rate is the percentage of tests that confirm an infection. In the state as a whole, the 14-day test positivity rate rose to 7.6. In terms of county-by-county cases, health authorities in Butte County were reporting 722 positive cases on Thursday, Sutter County 567, Yuba 319, Shasta 276, Glenn 259, Colusa 250, Tehama 173, Siskiyou 60, Lassen 52, Plumas 28, and Trinity County 3. Fatalities statewide rose by 157 Thursday to 8,027. 111 of them have been among healthcare workers. Deaths are increasing at a weekly rate of 9.4%. Cases are rising by more than twice that figure. A prayer gathering involving hundreds at Reading Sundial Bridge yesterday evening misled authorities, largely ignored state mandates on mask use and social distancing, putting the wider community at risk, according to county public health officials. The event was organized by a person affiliated with, but not in the leadership of, the Bethel Church, a charismatic megachurch in Reading. When city officials got wind of the event in the lead up to it, organizers assured them the event involved a small battery-powered amp, acoustic guitar, and mic, and declined to seek a permit. Officials said they were assured distancing would be observed, according to a press release by Health and Human Services Agency spokeswoman Carrie Schutte. Instead, people were jammed together and masks were barely evident. The incident draws parallels with a Cottonwood Rodeo event and a Mother's Day church service in the Palermo area of Butte County, both criticized after the fact as potential super spreader events. Free surgical masks and hand sanitizer supplies gathered and donated by the Governor's Office of Emergency Services will be available to representatives of small businesses Friday morning. Giveaways are being held from 9 to noon at four locations: on Air Park Drive at the Chico Municipal Airport, the Gridley Chamber of Commerce on Hazel, the Oroville Chamber of Commerce on Montgomery, and the Paradise Ridge Chamber of Commerce on Clark. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. This is the first time we've done this half-hour show as a weekly instead of a daily. But before scaling this program back, we brought you 90 episodes every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for 4 months. And on almost every single one of those episodes, NSPR's Mark Albert started the show off with the most recent COVID-19 data for California and for the North State. So now that we're airing our first weekly show, we thought it might make sense to try to make sense of those numbers. So who best to talk to than Mark, who has been looking at them daily since March? I spoke with him earlier today, first saying that the case numbers in the North State look alarming, but they are cumulative and include everyone: new cases, old cases, people who are sick, those who have died, and those who have been deemed recovered. So how bad is the pandemic in the North State?
Well, Sarah, going back to the beginning, the whole thing was to flatten the curve. Do what you can to avoid getting it and avoid spreading it so that hospitals don't get overwhelmed. Now, it's pretty hard to quantify, and only 9 of our 11 counties published data on the number of active cases. And if the California Department of Public Health makes that number available somewhere, I couldn't find it. But in the counties that do, there's 1,694 cases. Now, many people who've caught the infection are listed as recovered. And there's 716 active cases in those 9 counties. So about 42% are considered active cases. So when you hear the cumulative number climbing, it's important to remember that the figure includes people who have a seemingly mild case, at least for now, those fighting for their lives, along with those who are considered recovered, although what exactly that means isn't clear. We don't know how prevalent or how long-lasting other issues like seemingly permanent heart, lung, or kidney damage lasts, or alterations to blood chemistry that seems to be causing strokes in some patients. In general, though, things are not great now, and everything can change quickly.
And just to be clear, even with the state's COVID-19.california.gov website, there really is no one place to get this information. I mean, how are you pulling together these numbers?
Well, it takes a bit of hunting around. I'm using a mix of the state's official site and 11 different county sites, along with the California Department of Public Health website, which each report data a little bit differently, at least the counties do. They all show the total number of cases and the number of deaths, but beyond that, there's very little consistency.
I know cases aren't distributed evenly across the region, that there's more in the valley than in the mountains. How big is the difference, and are there any theories on that?
Well, it's a bit hard to parse. Statistics are by county, and several, like Shasta, have large mountainous areas, but most of their population lives in the valley. If we count Shasta as a valley county, there's 2,471 cases in the valley, and that represents 94% of the cases in the region. The other 133 or 6% are in the mountains. Now, Marysville, Yuba City, and Colusa County in general are all sort of within commute distance of Sacramento, where there are quite a few cases, although there are also many cases in Reno and Clark County, Nevada, generally, but that doesn't seem to be having the same spillover impact in our mountain communities.
What about numbers of hospital beds and ventilators? I mean, even if there aren't as many cases in the mountains as there are in the valley, if there aren't as many beds or ventilators there either, even a small amount of cases seem like they could put stress on those hospitals in those areas.
Sarah, that's absolutely right. There's 136 hospital beds spread among 7 different facilities in Lassen, Plumas, Siskiyou, and Trinity counties combined. If you're talking ICU beds, there's just 8. Now, thankfully, we're not on an island. Patients needing acute care are often transferred down into the valley or to the capital region or over to Reno. Now, that becomes an issue when and if those bigger metro hospitals fill up, and it's not entirely impossible. There are close to 5,000 cases in northwestern Nevada and 7,800 in Sacramento County alone. When hospitals began filling up in Imperial and Los Angeles counties, some patients began being transferred up to the Bay Area. So it's not inconceivable that we could see patients from out of the area being moved here.
What about age? Although the science is somewhat inconclusive, there is evidence that elderly are the most at risk for COVID-19 and for the worst outcomes. Is that bearing out locally?
Well, according to what I've been able to compile from 5 of the counties in the North State that have among the highest numbers of cases, that people 18 and under make up 11.8% of the cases. People 19 to 34 make up 38%. Those age 35 to 64 account for 38.3%. And those 65 and older, they also make up 11.8% of the cases. Now, we don't know the severity of these cases, what stage they're in, or their ultimate outcomes, but it is telling that it would seem that anyone could be vulnerable. In terms of fatalities, I really couldn't gain access to demographic information about the 21 deaths locally. However, the CDPH does have deaths broken down by age statewide, and it does confirm that older people are much more vulnerable. Among people from birth to age 17, According to CDPH, there has not been a single fatality in California. Among adults 18 to 49, they make up 6.6% of fatalities. Those age 50 to 64, 17.2%. And those 65 and over, they make up 76.1% of California's now 7,870 fatalities.
The last thing I wanted to bring up is the positivity rate. What is that and what is it telling us in each of our counties? Are there any trends?
I'll start with the last question first. The only consistent trend is that positivity rates are generally climbing everywhere. Now, the positivity rate measures the percentage of tests returning a positive result. In Colusa County right now, it's 17.1%. That means a bit less than one in five people tested has contracted COVID-19. Officials would like to see that number below five. The places where it's above five are, in descending order, Colusa County at 17.1, Lassen at 12.5, but that also includes several prisons, Glenn at 11.9, Sutter at 9.7, Yuba at 7.6, and Butte at 7.4. Shasta, by comparison, is 2.8 and Siskiyou 2.6. Elsewhere, they're even lower. So Colusa, Lassen, Glenn, Sutter, Yuba, and Butte are probably where there's the most transmission. Of course, the positivity rate is one of the factors officials consider as they weigh easing restrictions or opening schools this fall. And if I had to put money on it, I'd say we'd still be talking about returning to normal on New Year's Eve.
That was NSPR's Mark Albert going through all of those numbers you've been hearing him report each day. Even though our half-hour show has moved to a weekly, we are still bringing you those COVID-19 updates. You can tune into them at 8:30 in the morning and 6:30 in the evening, Monday through Friday. You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. More just ahead.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Amazon Studios with Radioactive, starring Rosamund Pike. Based on the true story of Marie Curie, the first woman to win the Nobel Prize, whose discoveries changed the face of science. Now streaming on Prime Video. And from Fidelity Wealth Management, where advisors work with their clients to develop flexible investment strategies that can evolve as their needs change. Learn more at fidelity.com/wealth. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Skoll Foundation, announcing the 2020 Skoll Social Entrepreneurs, leveraging the power of the collective to address pressing global problems. The awards can be viewed at skoll.org. From the ECMC Foundation, working to improve post-secondary educational outcomes for underserved students through evidence-based innovation. Learn more at ecmcfoundation.org. And from Americans for the Arts.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. The recent spike in COVID-19 cases in Butte County has caused the state to put it on its monitoring list. Butte County now joins more than 30 other counties already on the list, including Glenn, Sutter, Yuba, and Colusa counties from the North State. And its new position there means more business sectors could soon be required to shut down indoor operations. NSPR's Andre Bayek spoke on Wednesday with Butte County Public Health Director Danette York about the monitoring list, recent COVID outbreaks in the county, and measures people can take to reduce the spread of the virus. Andre first asked Director York to explain what it means for Butte County to now be on the state's monitoring list.
So, yes, we expected it for a while now. We've seen an increase in cases building. And I spoke with the State Department of Health on Monday. They had flagged us on Sunday for the first day of having over 100 cases per 100,000 population over the last 14 days. And so the process is that if you remain flagged for those any of the metrics, but that one is the one that was specific for us, then they put you on the monitoring list. And so yesterday was the third day we were flagged. Today is the first day we're actually added to the monitoring list. And if a county remains on the monitoring list for 3 consecutive days, then that triggers us as a county to have to close additional indoor sectors based on the state health officer order that was issued on July 13th.
I was going to ask, what are those additional businesses that would have to close those indoor operations?
Yeah, so it's really important to note that it is indoor operations. So if they can and choose to, they can operate outside. So the list includes gyms and fitness centers, places of worship, protests, offices for non-critical infrastructure sectors, personal care services, and they include nail salons, massage parlors, and tattoo parlors as examples of the personal care services, and then hair salons and barbershops and malls.
Can you take me through some of the measures that people can take to reduce the spread of the coronavirus here in Butte County and perhaps improve conditions to get off of the state's watch list?
Absolutely. I appreciate you asking that. We ask people to comply with all guidance that is out there, specifically wear face coverings when you are in public, in any public building, maintain 6 feet or more of social distancing, and refrain from going or attending or hosting gatherings of any size. So gatherings for individuals that are outside of your household are still not allowed anywhere in the state. And we do see some of our increase in cases being linked back to such gatherings. Even if it's a private gathering, even if it's family members, if the family members are not in the same household, it still should not be held. It's technically not allowed. And it is imperative that if you do have to get together with someone for any reason, that you continue using those other mitigations, such as wear your face coverings and remain 6 feet or more away from one another.
Speaking about the increase in cases here in Butte County, can you walk me through some of the outbreaks that public health has identified? I believe there have been some outbreaks in the county jail, for instance, and skilled nursing facilities.
Yes, so we have had 2 long-term care facilities or skilled nursing facilities, and the jail does have a current outbreak going. We've also seen what we consider outbreaks, again, from gatherings, such as there was a gathering over the 4th of July weekend that resulted in about 20 cases. And then we also have a small outbreak in a daycare center that resulted from one of the people at that 4th of July gathering sending a child to daycare.
The county's chief administrative officer signaled on Tuesday that the county will take a tougher law enforcement posture against businesses that perhaps don't follow public health rules, up to fines and perhaps other penalties. We've talked about enforcement or the lack of enforcement for quite a while in this program. Is it a bit late in the game to be taking this tougher posture?
Well, I can't really speak to it because I have not been part of those planning sessions on what the enforcement will look like. I will say that it's not specifically law enforcement, it's more other enforcement. So, for example, the part that I can speak to is public health staff will be involved in enforcement with any sectors that we permit on an annual basis. For example, food establishments have to get a permit from the local public health department in order to operate annually. And so we do regular inspections with them, and we follow up on any complaints that come for food establishments. So public health staff will be monitoring complaints regarding non-compliance with state orders, such as requiring face coverings for anyone working in an area where food is prepared or served, and will be first going out and providing education and making sure that the owners, operators, employees understand what is required of them. and asking and trying to learn if there's any resources they need to try to help come into compliance. And I believe that that will be across the board. Education will be first, trying to help the businesses become compliant, and then moving on to other enforcement areas if needed.
I'd like to pivot to testing. It appears there could be some trouble for people setting up appointments locally. Can you explain what the current situation is in Butte County regarding testing?
Yeah, so our local Optum Serve site is in Chico, and that site was created and is maintained by the state. There were or is a large desire to get tested now by many people. So they saw an increase in the registrations and appointments being made through their online service. Unfortunately, after many people made their appointments, they didn't show up for them. And so in an effort to try to decrease the number of no-shows for appointments, the state has decided to only allow appointments to be made 1 week in advance. And so if individuals go on the LHI.cares website to try to get an appointment and our local Chico location does not show up, that just means that they're booked for the next week. So I recommend going back in daily and checking to see if they can get an appointment. There is also a new OptumServe site that just recently opened in Orland. So that will be one that's fairly close if people can get an appointment there. Again, if it doesn't show up when they try to make an appointment, that just means they're booked for the next week. So it is still operating, and it is going to continue operating at least through all of August, and then could possibly be extended past that.
Do you know if the criteria has changed regarding who is prioritized for testing?
There was a state guidance that came out changing the requirements or the prioritization of who should be tested. I do not know how OptumServe has implemented that or if they have yet, but due to the backlog and the overwhelming of the labs that are running the test, they are trying to prioritize those who are the sickest or hospitalized with COVID over those who are asymptomatic.
Is there anything I didn't ask you that you think I missed or that people should know about the COVID crisis?
I'd like to reiterate one more time that people do their best to follow the guidance, follow all the mitigations in place. Just the face coverings, I recognize that they're not fun and most people do not like wearing them, but do it for yourself, your loved ones, and your community. That's the only way we are going to be able to get back open anytime soon. And in addition to the businesses, we also want to consider trying to get our kids to school for in-person learning as much as possible. And we can't do that while we're on the monitoring list.
That was Danette York, Butte County's Public Health Director, speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek. COVID-19 is affecting everyone, young and old. But for teenagers trapped at home all summer, it's excruciating. The letdowns seem never-ending. Events young people look forward to all year were canceled. Prom, graduation, senior trips, then came summer vacation cancellations. No more camping trips with friends, concerts, or movies. Reporter Tessa Paoli talked to teens in Plumas and Sierra counties to see how they were coping during the summer of pandemic.
Hey girls. Downtown Downeyville in Sierra County is usually packed with tourists in the middle of the summer. But this July, it's quiet, and so are the teenagers. Mia Martinelli's 14 and envisioned the summer after her first year of high school filled with hanging out with friends and shopping sprees in Reno. But the pandemic has changed a lot of her plans.
My parents are very loose about it, and then it hit them and they were like, you can't go outside, it's too dangerous. I didn't see her for a month and a half.
She's talking about her best friend, Isabel. They're in the same class at Downeyville High School and live across the street from each other. They weren't allowed to hang out inside until recently. So they'd say hi and chat outside their houses, 6 feet apart with a fence in between them. Isabel could not get used to it.
She would be there, like, waving at me. And I was like, we're so close, but, like, so far apart.
And for Mia, too much time at home without seeing friends took a toll.
I was kind of losing my mind. I got in trouble a lot. My attitude changed. So I got my door taken off because I was very rude and I would slam it all the time. So yeah, that happened a couple times.
James White has also readjusted his expectations for the summer. He just graduated from Quincy High School and was looking forward to a busy, fun couple of months before leaving for the University of Nevada to study animal science.
It kind of hit me like a wall because every single thing I've done up to this point has been working toward, you know, graduation, the county fair, all of those things, and that had kind of been taken away one by one by one.
The Plumas Sierra County Fair in Quincy wasn't just a social event for James. The 17-year-old had been raising and showing rabbits and poultry for years and was looking forward to his last county fair before moving to college.
Yeah, I raise fancy breeds of chickens, a little fancier.
But James still isn't sure if he'll be able to move to Reno and live in the dorms for his first semester. It all depends on the COVID-19 numbers.
I've lived in Quincy my whole life, a really small town, and I'm excited to go out and see the world and experience diversity and all that.
While events were getting canceled for most teens in Plumas and Sierra counties, 17-year-old Tyna Farmer was making things happen. She heard about the Black Lives Matter movements all across the country after George Floyd's death and thought, why not Quincy? She decided it was time to visibilize the racism she's experienced in her hometown her entire life as a Black person.
I've just kind of watched and let it happen, and then this year, I was kind of like, nah, like I'm speaking up. I'm going to call attention to the racial injustice.
Tyana's friend, Tristan McMichael, who's a senior too, stepped in to help organize the protests for June 5th and spread the word.
Just kind of shared a flyer out and it went everywhere. Like we didn't expect.
Quincy viral.
Hundreds of people in masks holding signs showed up in support. Tyana read a powerful poem and gave a speech about her experience in Quincy's mostly white schools.
Be grateful, brown girls. Your voices are so loud. They have the power to challenge hate.
There were literally people playing music. There were people dancing. Like, it was awesome. It was so nice, and so many people came out to show support.
But even after organizing a huge protest on their own, Tyan and Tristan are also very aware that their last summer before graduation is being spent at home in lockdown.
It's our, you know, our last summer of being an actual legal kid.
I'm living it up.
I know.
Tyana's waiting patiently for the pandemic to be over so she can take one of the most important tests for all high schoolers, the one to get her driver's license. Tessa Paoli, Cap Radio News.
That story is part of our rural reporting project with Cap Radio in Sacramento. To hear more stories from the project, go to capradio.org/rural. Or you can head to mynspr.org. And that is your program. As always, if you have any thoughts for us, you can leave them on our message line 433-9216 or on our website, mynspr.org. This week's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Andre Bayek, Angel Haracha, Eric Radaville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in every Thursday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following Friday morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.